Epi Guerrero passed away, and I wanted to give you the opportunity to. I knew him a little bit. He was around Toronto on occasion, but obviously he was somebody who was very close to you for a long period of time. Tell us about Epi.
Well, you know, the funny thing about it was that he played in the Braves chain for a period of time, but then later on in his career, before he came to early on in his career, before he came to the Blue Jays, I should say, he played in Quebec. They had a summer league in Quebec, so he actually played in Canada, you know, long before he came a scout. And I first ran into him in 67 on the recommendation of a fellow scout in Miami. And the first guy that we signed together was Cesar Cedeno with the Houston club. And then from there, you know, we worked for Houston, New York. And then finally he came over with in Toronto. And certainly he is the person that got our Latin American program off the ground. And as we talk about Tony Fernandez and Carlos Delgado, Damasco Garcia, Louis Leal, Kelvin Escobar, I mean, you could go on. There's over 40 players that he scouted and signed in the Major League Baseball. And, you know, he's the guy that always had a passion, a love for the game, but he also had a passion and love for Toronto and Canada. So, you know, it's certainly, I've known him well over 40 years, so it's certainly, it wasn't unexpected. I had seen him about a month ago, and his health was not good at that time, and I talked to him a couple times this week, and so it always is a shock, but it was not unexpected.
Right. What was the synergy, what was the chain of events that led you to hire him? Was he one of your first hires? Was he somebody when you got the call and decided to come to Toronto, was he one of the first guys you looked to because you wanted to exploit's the wrong word, mine this talent base in the Dominican?
Yeah, he was absolutely, at that time, he has been really for the last 25 years, he's been the number one scout in Latin America, you know, be it Venezuela, Dominican, Colombia, Central America, Mexico. He's been the number one guy, and so we were very fortunate, Bob, going back there to 76 when we got the franchise going, and we had Bob Maddock and LaMacchia, Bob Engel and Epi kind of came on board with us, and we kind of got this thing off the ground with that first expansion draft in November of 76. So those were the guys that were in on the ground floor, and I was thinking about it today, probably, you know, over at Old Exhibition Stadium, and you were certainly over there from the beginning. I mean, we probably only had 20 people in the
That's
whole
all.
Building,
yeah.
Counting George Holm and the tickets and Beast and
yeah,
down there. So it was a small operation and a very close operation.
So, Pat, what did Epi do purely on, like in the DR? What did he do that other scouts couldn't do?
You know what? There's some guys that scout and they don't sign players, and there's other guys who scout that do sign players. He had a very good instinct and feel for players. He knew what it took to be a player. And what was really kind of delicate about his situation is here you're signing players who have to make a tremendous adjustment coming from wherever it be, Latin America, the United States, and it's a new surroundings they're getting into. They don't speak English, and he really had to look at the players and kind of determine, you know, which player could make that adjustment, go to the United States, be away from, you know, home for a period of 6-7 months, adjust to the situation and be successful. So he had that instinct or that feel. There's in any sport, I think there's some people that just have the feel and the gut feel and what it takes to be a player, and he was one of them.
With Pat Gillick, did the Blue Jays plant their flag first in the Dominican, or were the Dodgers there first?
The Dodgers were probably a little bit ahead of us, you know, in the Dominican, but, you know, once we got rolling, you know, I think we kind of surpassed the Dodgers in the Dominican. They certainly had two outstanding players. Pedro Martinez was one, Mariano Duncan, and then they had Pedro's brother also was a heck of a pitcher, you know, for the Dodgers. So they had some players, but Once we got underway, I think we were neck and neck with them, you know, both in the Dominican and throughout Latin America.
So how just out of curiosity, how would it work? I mean, Epi goes on a mission, on a scouting mission, and the next thing you know, the phone rings, and he says, you know, I want you to come and look at somebody, or I've signed the guy.
We had a history, you know, going back through Houston and New York, and so I had a pretty good idea. When he called me and he wanted to sign a player, I had a pretty good idea. You know, once in a while, we'd run into a guy that was going to take a lot of money. For instance, he called me and we went down and he wanted me to look at Carlos Delgado before we signed him. But usually, I'm looking through the list of players that he signed over the years, and other than Delgado, there might be a player on here that I saw in a workout or I went to see. But as far as him calling me and say, hey, look, I want you to take another look at him before I do something, I don't think there were the only player I can really recall was Carlos Delgado.
Was there one guy that he signed that maybe you weren't as convinced of that turned out to be the right move? Does one pop into mind?
Well, let me tell you, it wasn't really a signing. It was another situation, which at the time didn't seem like a big deal. But we had a player named Mike Sharpeson that we traded over to.
Sure.
We traded over to the Dodgers. And at the time, Gordy Ash and I were in the office, and I was talking to Fred Clare, the GM of the Dodgers. And I had a background on the two players we were interested in. One was Jose Offerman, and the other one was Juan Guzman. And I got all the information and the background from Epi before I even called Fred Clare. And we got into the discussion, and we didn't make the deal. And after we got off the call, Gordy said, I think you made a mistake. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I think you told Fred it was his choice of players. And I said, are you sure? And I said, I thought it was our choice of players. And we were going to take Offerman in the deal. And he said, no, I think, Pat, you said that it's his choice. So I called Fred back, and I said to Fred, you know, I'm sorry. I might have made a mistake. Gordy was sitting here with me. And I said, so we'll take Guzman in the deal. But, again, the information on both those players, because they were both young players at that time, came from Epi Guerrero. So, as we know, Guzman went on and had a few good years for us and was a key part of that 92 World Championship team.
I've never been to the Dominican, so I can only speak to this on a secondhand basis. But I am told that during those glory years, late 70s and into the certainly into the mid 80s and perhaps beyond, that there would be more Blue Jays hats, logos, paraphernalia in the Dominican by far than any other organization in Major League Baseball. Is that true?
Bob, it was absolutely crazy. No matter where you went in Santo Domingo or outside the capital, or you went to the went by a beach or went to a ballpark, I mean, there were Blue Jay hats, memorabilia all over the place. It was utterly fantastic. We had Tony Fernandez and we had Guzman,
sure,
and we had, you know, other guys you forget like Damaso Garcia, Domingo Ramos, Junior Felix, Nelson Liriano. All those players came out of the Dominican, and just to name a few, and certainly when they went back, they were sort of ambassadors for Toronto, ambassadors for the Blue Jays.
And so players in the Dominican, I would assume many of them would grow up aspiring not just to be baseball players, but be Toronto Blue Jays.
Absolutely.
And that would have made your job, or Epi's job as it turned out, a little bit easier in signing them. I mean, because you guys were the... You were the Rolls Royce. You were the blue chip. You know, every kid wanted to play baseball, but his first choice would always be the Blue Jays, wouldn't it?
It would be, and I think this too. Unfortunately, I mean, going back, we still have in some parts of the United States, we still have some racism problems. I don't think we have those same problems in Canada. And I think one thing, there was a good feeling of our players coming to Canada. I think they felt at home there. I think they were treated well by the people in Canada, and consequently, they felt comfortable. I always thought that, that the Latin American players were very loyal players, and when it came to free agency, if you wanted to retain them, if you made a competitive offer, they would probably stay where they felt comfortable, and for the most part, I think most of the Latin American players felt comfortable in Toronto.
Did you have when you were the GM and you were bringing these players in specifically from the Dominican, did you feel a need to make sure that there was at least a group of them? Because I can recall many of these guys would come, we'd see them at Dunedin for the first time, and they couldn't speak barely a word of English. And I know you had translators and people around them to even through their minor league careers to help them acclimatize themselves to the North American culture. Was there a conscious effort on your part to say, you know, we can't just have one or two of these guys. We have to have a small group so that they feel more comfortable?
Well, absolutely. They're coming to a strange country, different customs, be it the United States or Canada, different ways of life that they've probably never experienced before. A lot of the young men come from very, poor backgrounds. And so consequently, for them to have someone else around where they can ask a question or they can ask for some guidance, it's good to have, four or five people together. And they can kind of put their heads together if there is a question that comes up. But, we did make an effort and, worked out well. Almost all the players we had, we never really had any sort of a off the field problem or discipline problem with any of them. They all adjusted quite well. And as I say, I think all of them had a very, very special place in their heart for Canada and for Toronto.
Pat, how much time would Epi spend around the big club?
He would come into spring training and then he would probably come in once during the year. I don't know if you remember, Bob, this is a long time ago. It's over 30 years ago, but yeah. He, in 81, he was a coach for Bob Maddock.
Yep.
When Bob was the
When Bob was the
manager of the Blue Jays, he was a coach with Bobby at that time. Mm. So he spent about a half of the year here, but he would come in a couple times a year. But really, he really loved to be out with the kids, working with the kids, and so consequently, he'd visit all our minor league clubs to check on the prospects and check on some of his players. But then he would go back, Dominican, Venezuela, wherever it might be to look for more players. So great guy, great employee, love for the game, passion for the game, and just it's unfortunate that it happens, but it's going to happen to all of us, I guess.
Yeah, we're getting to that point, aren't we? Where our friends are starting to disappear. Can you even imagine or calculate how many bats, balls, gloves you guys sent to the Dominican and to the Caribbean in general?
There used
to be a program, right, where you guys would gather used baseball equipment and send it down there.
I can't tell you how much, but it was a tremendous amount. And the one thing that was wonderful from our standpoint, we had a real good supportive ownership. Don McDougall, Howard Webster, Peter Woodrington, Mr. Hardy, Beast, and everybody. We're very good support for our program, down in the Dominican Republic, and they really understood what these young people were going through from an adjustment standpoint. And so it really worked out for a very good partnership and a very good relationship with the people from Latin America.
Was there a time when the Blue Jays lost their focus? They certainly lost their dominance, which probably was an inevitability because you guys were, getting the cream of the crop a lot of the time, and other organizations eventually realized that and started to move in. But was there a time during the Blue Jay history, either while you were there or after you left, where it would be accurate to say that the Blue Jays de-emphasized their involvement in the Dominican specifically?
Well, I can't say specifically, but...
Or was it just maybe the competition?
No, I think there was... For a period of time, there was a bit of a de-emphasis, on that area. My whole contention is that if you're going to be really faithful to the fans, you've got to use every area, you've got to use every tool to try to build a club. I mean, we used the Rule 5 when I happened to be there for Gruber and Manny Lee and Bell and Jim Gott and people like that, and then you make trades, and then you have the amateur draft, and then the other area you have is Latin America, and now you have Europe. So if you're going to build a baseball team, I mean, you have to use every one of those areas And I think you're kind of shortchanging the fans and the public if you don't use every possible area to build, you know, to build a club. And so consequently, I think there was a little de-emphasis, you know, on Latin America. And anytime you just take, you know, you take a couple deep breaths and you let it go by, you're going to lose ground.
And Pat, you think Europe's a growing market?
Yeah, I think it's got possibilities. Right now, probably, John, the three you know, largest areas over there are Holland, Italy, and Germany. And Germany has really, you know, kind of come on in the last year or two. But those are three of the hottest areas right now. You know, they're playing baseball. They're places in Spain and Czechoslovakia, et cetera. But really, Holland is probably number one, Italy's two, and Germany would be three.
We did. There was a documentary done here about a year ago. Greg Zahn did a documentary on baseball in Africa. Is Africa possibly the next place that scouts will start looking at, or is there another place that's kind of on your radar?
No, they've been going into South Africa. In fact, a fellow used to be with me in Baltimore. He's working for Seattle right now. He goes into South Africa quite regularly, and he's signed two or three players out of South Africa. So, you know, there are players, you know, down in that area. But I think eventually, you know, might not be in my lifetime, but I think probably later on that there will be some action in Africa for sure.
It is a sad day indeed as Epi Guerrero passes away at the age of 71. As I said off the top, I cannot claim to have known him well. I met him. I certainly saw him around, especially at spring training. And I can tell the audience that he was both loved and respected by the Blue Jay organization, and he'll be forever missed.
Yeah, I would say going back to those early years, Bob Maddock, Alamacchia, Epi, Engel, we kind of got that thing off the ground in 76. And
yep.
I was thinking today, you know, going to spring training in 1977, we had 41 players, and that was the organization, and wasn't very many. Only had 16 reserves, so
yeah,
nobody better get, you know, you better not get hurt, I'll tell you that.
And all of us stayed at the Ramada Inn Countryside. You remember that?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
The organization was small enough we could stay in literally one motel.
Now let me ask you a question. Now I was driving home the other night and listening. Shut the radio off here in Seattle. It was 4-1, and the next thing I knew was 5-4. Have they recovered yet?
I think yes. The fan base has recovered, but
Pat,
I don't think they'll ever forget.
Actually, Pat, the answer is no. They haven't recovered.
Okay,
and they never will.
They never will.
And it was only the first round.
Yeah, my son-in-law is a big Maple Leaf fan, lives in Detroit, and sits in front of it, watches the package, and has his blue Maple Leaf sweater on all the time. And I know that he was absolutely devastated.